Hello, James. How are you today?
I'm good. Where are you dialing in from, sir?
I am up north at an undisclosed location.
Oh, are we not supposed to say where they're...
I don't know.
The Leafs camp is going outside of Toronto, as they tend to do every year. What are they up there, 2 days or something?
Indeed.
Well, that's nice. You get a little getaway. I told you, yes, when you get there to go hit the pool, so I don't know. Did you do that yet?
No, I think I'll go for a run. It's really beautiful outside. But yeah, it's actually like it's a nice point in camp where the roster is starting to get shaved down. You have a pretty good sense, not like 100%, but like you have a pretty good sense now of what the team is going to look like, with an asterisk being like injuries, performance can change. But like we have a sense of some things. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about some stuff related to camp. We have to talk about Nick Robertson, but I want us to talk about Rasmus Sandin finally signing his contract. So we'll get into that. You wrote about the Austin Matthews contract extension possibility, which I think we should spend some time on. I want to talk about the Nylander one as well, if we have a few minutes. But let's start with like the roster. And I think we have to start with Nick Robertson. It seems pretty clear now that he's going to make the team, like barring something out of the ordinary. Are you kind of at that point now where he's not in pencil anymore, he's in pen?
Well, I guess part of the equation is, Tavares is probably going to miss games to start the year, right? So there's more spots. The only thing is, like, with the cap, they could probably only carry 12 forward. So if everybody's healthy, does he make the team? I mean, maybe.
But everybody's not healthy, right?
Yeah. So with everybody not healthy, I think for sure you put him on the team. And ideally, you know, I think he... Not only just making the team to start the year, Jonas, I think he's earned the right to play with some good players and get an opportunity with players that can, you know, not like on a checking line or something like that.
Well, that's an interesting question. Let's actually talk about that right now. John Tavares, you mentioned, is out. He'll miss the first however many games of the season. So in theory, like there is a spot you could put him on the quote-unquote second line with Kerfoot and Nylander. Is that where you would put him? Because like I still kind of think that they'll put Cale Järnkrok there,
mm-hmm,
and then start Nick Robertson on something like a fourth line with, like, I don't know if it's Holmberg. Like the fourth line is still very much TBD, and it's part of the lineup is TBD because also we don't know what's going to happen with Pierre Engvall. Like if Pierre Engvall is going to miss some time to start the year, that adds another wrinkle to it as well. So like, would you play Robertson? Would you just stick him on that line with Kerfoot and Nylander and say, you know what, go get it?
I don't know if I like the composition of that line.
Agreed.
But I mean, I think the other thing too, and we talked about this last week, so I don't want to spend too much time on it, but for anyone that missed the show, I don't even know if it's a fourth line. Like if the, you know, I think they're going to try and have like 2 third lines this year, I think, especially when they're fully healthy. And you know, maybe the camp line isn't playing as much as it did last year, and then you've got more of a scoring option on that other line. So, you know, it's not even... I just think it's important you play Robertson with some talented players, and you don't play him in a, you know, a defensive role. Like he shouldn't be out there on a line with Clifford and Simmons or whatever, right? Like she needs to be with some players that can get him the puck in good spots on the ice.
Well, to that point, I'm looking back at the game log or the lineups from last year. So when he first got recalled in late February, his line mates were Spezza and Simmons.
Mm-hmm.
And he played there for a handful of games.
And it didn't really... he wasn't that noticeable.
Nothing happened. And eventually they moved him up to play with Tavares and Nylander. And it was kind of the same thing. Like nothing really happened. And that was what's been interesting at camp and what I think the Leafs have been happy to see is like, now you watch him and like stuff is happening in the way that it's supposed to be happening. Like when you're like, this is what Sheldon Keefe said, when you're an offensive player, like we need to see offense. And you look in his career so far, he really hasn't generated much of anything. He's really young, obviously. So that's part of the equation. But do you see something different in him so far this fall that makes you think, hey, that top line of what you and I both thought he might be able to be in the NHL of like 20 goals, 50 points. Are you starting to see that player kind of come out now?
Yeah, although, I mean, preseason, you got to be a little bit careful, right? Because you're not exactly playing against NHL competition. But that said, yes. I think I see more strength in him and just more confidence, too. I think it was it Nylander who said something? Maybe it was, I can't remember who said it. One of the veteran players said that, you know, he's just more comfortable in confident in the way that he's not like rushing to make a play. It was either Nylander or Matthews, I think, that said it.
Well, it's interesting that you say that because I spent some time talking to him earlier at camp, and that was one of the things like he kept going back to. He said, like, I'm really not any different. It's just I'm actually a lot more confident. And I think the last couple years have been really hard on him just because he seems like, you read the tea leaves and he seems like a guy who's very hard on himself and is very like,
well,
I don't know if single-minded is the right word, but like he's very focused on hockey all the time.
Yeah. His expectations, right, of himself are so high, and he's one of those guys that I always joke, they eat hockey pucks for breakfast and lunch and dinner. Like he's just you talk to him about his off seasons and stuff, and it's like, it's just hockey, 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 hockey. And his brother down in Dallas is the same way.
Yeah. And so the more I've thought about it, and I'm going to be writing about it on Wednesday for The Athletic, I kind of think that him making that bubble team in 2020 was kind of like a blessing and a curse. Like it was good in the sense that like, it's cool. Like he came up, he looked like he should be on the team just based on how Pierre Engvall was performing at that point. They could use his offense, but then like, it's kind of made everything that's come after feel like it's disappointing. Like if he's not in the NHL, it's like he's doing something wrong. And it's like, well, like he just turned 21. Like he's really,
well, he was 18 still, in that bubble year. Right.
Right. And you know what I mean? So it almost kind of screwed everything up.
Stepping right from junior into the NHL is in the NHL playoffs, no less. Or I guess, yes. I guess play in or whatever
play you want to call it. Playoffs.
Whatever you want to. Well, you know what you can call it? You can call it postseason because postseason means it's after the season. So there you go. Okay. That postseason series against Columbus, like the pace of that was to go from the Peterborough Petes in that weird year where their games were getting shut down and everything to play in the NHL postseason. I mean, there aren't very many players that can do that can step right in. So I don't hold that against him at all. And, you know, like when you say there hasn't been very much production at the NHL level, I mean, he played four games in that play-in series against Columbus when even the Leafs' best players were having a hard time generating offense, and he was 18 years old. He played six games in the NHL the next season, and he played 10 games last year. And he's in the regular season games, he's got 2 points in one goal and one assist in 16 games.
Yeah. I mean, that's you look last year, James, he had one goal in 10 games. And
yeah,
I looked like he was on the ice, James, for 1 5-on-5 goal in like almost 100 minutes. Now, some of that's luck.
Well, but it's who like, he's playing with too, Jonas. Like
he was not playing with Tavares and Nylander for like half those games.
Oh, I thought you were going back to like the Simmons and Spezza times.
Oh, some of those minutes are those guys, but some of those minutes are two of the four best offensive players on the team. Like again, like he's young. Like, but this is what Keith said. Like there was a line Keith said that really struck me. He said it was like last week at some point. He said like we need basically to see him, and now I'm paraphrasing or quoting, like he said, impact the game positively. And I thought about that for the next couple of days. I was like, what does that mean? Like, what does that mean? Impact the game positively. He said, like, we are working with him on that. And so I asked him a couple of days ago, like, what does that mean? And he said, well, it's just like he needs to make plays. He needs to generate offense. He needs to get pucks on net. He needs to create for his like line mates. And he needs to generate offense and end up on the score sheet. And now you look these last few games, especially, I mean, you can go to that Montreal game where he has 3 assists. Like now he's involved, he's on the score sheet. So you can kind of see something brewing that you maybe didn't see before is kind of what I'm getting at.
Yeah. I mean, he's still a kid too. So
yes.
I think he'll be the youngest
player on the team, right?
Wasn't last week's show, weren't we saying that people have given up on this guy too early? Like it felt like people were treating him like he was a bust.
But that's what I get back to that bubble thing is like it created this expectation that like if he's not in the NHL, these last couple of years. It's like he's failing. And well, that's presumptuous, right? Like, it's too early.
He did score, as an 18-year-old, he did score 55 goals in 46 OHL games. So that has a way of creating expectations, too.
Sure, but I think being a prospect for the Leafs.
Yeah. I think his trajectory looks just fine. And now what I think what we don't know is, you know, is he going to be a second line guy? Or is he going to be a third line guy? And, you know, I think that's really the path that he's on here. And with everything we know about how hard he works and his dedication and everything like that, you know, I wouldn't bet against him.
Well, so let me ask you this before we get to Sandin, and we will get to the pod bag. I forgot to mention that. Has anybody else from that kind of crop of whatever you want to call them, like bottom part of the lineup forwards, has anybody really popped for you? Like, for me, we talked about him last week. Pontus Holmberg would be in that conversation. Zach Aston-Reese, like, I think he's in a different boat than these guys I'm talking about. Like, is any of like Malgin, Simmons, Clifford, Anderson, any of those guys done anything for you? Steve's like, or no?
I think Malgin's been fine. I think that, you know, he looks like a guy that you'd be okay putting in the lineup if there's people injured. Do you think there's a chance that he makes the team with if Engvall and Tavares are out? Like, is there going to be room for him?
I think there's a chance, James. And like, I got to be honest, like, I'm not a big fan, but I can see what they're talking about with him, where the big thing that they're noticing is like when he doesn't have the puck now, he's like really fighting to get it back. He's not my favorite, but I don't know that anybody else, like I've liked Clifford a little bit, but like, I mean, we've seen that story. Same with Simmons. I don't think Anderson's ready to play in the NHL. Yeah.
Sorry to interrupt you. Do you worry that like your bottom six forward group is small? If you've got, Robertson and Tavares and Engvall are out, and that's and then you're going with Malgin. Like you might want to try and have some different elements in the forward group.
I guess I think that's fair. It's just like it's October, right? Like if you get to the playoffs and that's still the bottom of your lineup, maybe that's something you look at and say, well, or the trade deadline, maybe you can address that. Like I'm not really worried about that now, I guess is where I'm at.
To that point, I mean, maybe they should give Robertson a chance on the second line just to see. I mean, if he makes good on it, then all of a sudden, you know, maybe you end up being able to ride with that for a little while.
Yeah, because it would give you flexibility to move some other guys around. Like you could play, I'm just making this up off the top of my head. Like you could play, I don't know, you could have a second bottom six line of like, I don't know, Yarncroc, Engvall, and Camp for... I don't know. It would just give you some different options. Like the other guy I forgot to mention is Adam Gaudette. It feels like the injury really kind of set him back. Like I don't, maybe it, like it's him or Malgin. Like they're in the same kind of boat. I think I don't know. Does he do anything for you?
He hasn't really stood out a whole lot. I know Sheldon Keefe early in camp was talking him up a little bit. I always thought that he was probably going to be one of those guys on the bubble. And, I guess you just hope that he clears waivers and then he gives you some depth if you run into more injuries, right? I mean, the tough thing with being as tight to the cap as the Leafs are now that, you know, Sandin's in the fold is, I guess we'll see. I mean, some people are talking about the LTIR and whatever. The thing with the LTIR is it only gives you the room.
Temporarily.
Yeah, it gives you the room temporarily. So it's not like they're going to be able to, I don't think they're going to be able to carry a bunch of extra forwards unless... You know,
well, and James, like, it doesn't sound, I mean, based on the timeline that they gave, that Tavares is going to be out long enough for that to be an option.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, this happened with Matthews at the beginning of last year, and it's kind of a stupid rule, but the player has to miss the first 24 days or 10 games of the season to be on LTIR. You can't, even if someone is out for a month that includes part of training camp, it doesn't matter. They have to miss the 10 games in the regular season. So I don't think that applies to either Engvall or Tavares, so... Those guys aren't going on LTIR, and the Leafs are going to be tight, and probably can't carry a bunch of extra guys.
Indeed, and it's 10 days, or it's 10 games and 24 days. It's
right.
Both.
Right.
Stupid. So you mentioned the cap, and that's a perfect lead-in to Sandin signing. You had written something earlier this fall about the four pathways that this thing could go. One of them included that he could just sign, end up signing the same 2-year deal as Liljegren. And I remember reading that. I was like, is that like, they're really going to do that? Like I really raised an eyebrow at that. And you were right. Like I'm kind of blown away that they would not sign it all summer and then wait a week into camp and just sign it.
You know how I knew, Jonas, and it wasn't even talking to the parties involved, or it wasn't like a source or anyone that told me. I just spent a lot of time looking at the Leafs cap sheet and moving things around. And as far as I could tell, the Leafs had designed their roster very specifically so that he could still sign that $1.4 million deal. Like there were a lot of different permutations with the roster that I looked at, and it would come to it, and it was like, oh, they have $1.4 million left. Oh, they have $1.4 million left. And it kept coming up, and I was like, I think this is by design that they, you know. So, like, I thought maybe there was a world where he might get 1.5 or something like that. But if you look at it when they're healthy, it's going to be tight regardless when once they get fully healthy, once Liljegren comes back. But that was how I think for the Leafs, it was like the options for them, given how much space they had, were going to be a 1-year deal for 800,000 or 900,000 or a 2-year deal at 1.4. And there wasn't really a lot more room to give on a 2-year deal for the Leafs.
Well, I guess what I'm surprised is that he signed that 2-year deal. Like I was just expecting that he would just sign a 1-year deal and that would be the end of it. But I guess the calculation becomes like, okay, so you sign a 1-year deal. How are you going to be able to make up the money in the second year? And they're just really, that was going to be hard.
Yeah. I mean, unless he gets like a 3-year deal next year or something, but then I don't know, like if you do the math, $2.8 million for the next 2 years is pretty good because he's really only earned $800,000 or $900,000 on his, on this season. That's what he should get paid. That leaves like $2 million that he's foreseeably owed in the following year, if that makes sense. So, you know, the $1.4 million a year, it's not a bad contract for someone that unless he felt like he was going to play in the top four all year, and then he would definitely get. You know, like if he played 20 minutes a night this season and he goes to arbitration, all of a sudden you're talking about it's a different ballgame what he's going to get.
Well, so I wonder, like, if I was him or I was his agent or anyone like that, if like the first day of camp comes and Jake Muzzin has a back injury, if I'd be like, maybe there is an opportunity for me to play top 4 minutes and I don't know.
There might produce, be.
But like, there might be, but like Mark Giordano's around. Like, yeah, I don't. It just all kind of seems in the end like I think players should. I like players exercising their rights and standing up for themselves. It just felt like this was a battle that you couldn't win, and missing the first week of camp and then signing a deal that you could have signed in June just seems pointless. But anyway.
Well, I told you that in the summer that I thought this was not the right. You know, he's got a good agent, and you know, I like Sandin as a player, and I think they ended up in the right place. I'm not sure why. There were really only two options here. I mean, I outlined the four paths. The first two were the 1-year deal or the 2-year deal. The next path was he misses the entire year, which was, you know, basically Armageddon. And the last one was they trade him. And I do think that was potentially on the table.
I do too.
Just given the Leafs, like if he would have held out into the season, it may have been something that they would have had to trade somebody at some point.
Yeah, and I'm curious to see how this year goes for him because, like you mentioned, I think he'll play maybe a little bit more than he played last year, but like maybe not. You know what I mean?
It depends on the injuries and stuff, Jonas. I mean, who knows? You know, he'll be in the top six with Liljegren outright, and looks like he's going to play some on the right side. And how that goes, right? Yeah, exactly. How he does in those minutes is going to dictate how much he plays. If he's great on the right side, maybe it makes Justin Hall even more expendable and they feel good about moving on from him when Liljegren's ready to come back.
Yeah. I'm curious to see how it goes for him on the right side because like it's hard to be a young NHL defenseman, like period, and now you're playing on your offside.
Well, I don't want to derail like what you had planned or whatever, but like
no, go ahead.
I think this is relevant. Like if let's say the season started tomorrow, Liljegren's out. Let's say everybody else is healthy. What do you do on defense?
Well, it seems like Sheldon Keefe has kind of made up his mind that he wants to play Riley and Brody together, which is like a little bit of a surprise for me that he's not going to put Muzzin back with Brody. He may still. It just hasn't felt like that. Things he said, he's kind of constantly gone back to liking that, and for good reason.
But I think then that means Jonas. I think that the Brody Muzzin or the Muzzin Brody pairing was partly designed for the Lightning. I think that that's why, and they also had Lyubushkin too. So those were the factors that led to them doing that.
But you remember, James, like the only time Muzzin looked, not the only time, but most of the time he looked good last year, which wasn't a lot of time, it looked like he needed Brody. And now, so the question becomes, okay, so if you're not going to play him with Brody, are you going to play him with Justin Hall? Well, they haven't done that at camp so far, and obviously that didn't go well last year. So you're going to play him with Sandin. Okay, well, what does that mean? Are you, like, that makes me think that they're going to reduce how much he plays, is my first instinct to that.
Well, I don't know what the second pair is. Is the second pair Giordano Hall?
Yeah, which was very good for them in the playoffs. Sandin?
I mean,
no, I think the second pair is Giordano Hall. Like, they're going to, they would, I would think, play the harder matchups than a pair with Sandin on it, I would think.
That's the thing I saw from Giordano last year, was that he's lost a little bit in terms of how spry he is, as one does. But defensively, he's still smart. He's still, as Mike Babcock would say, he knows where to stand, you know. And I think you're right. I mean, and I think it really makes sense to reduce Muzzin's minutes and kind of put him in more like a 18, 19 minutes a game kind of situation, and not wear him out.
Yeah, it's just like, okay, but then what's like your plan, your bigger picture plan for him? Like, when the playoffs come around, are you just going to suddenly start playing him?
It depends how he plays. It's the same with Sandin, really. It's like, it depends how he looks. You know, like, it's an interesting mix, because most NHL teams, what they do is they load up their top four, and that's where a lot of the salary goes, and that's where a lot of the minute goes. And then you got your some teams have a fifth guy that they play, you know, like 18 minutes that mixes in on special teams and whatever. But some teams, they don't play that third pair hardly at all. Like, there are lots of teams where that third pair is getting 12 minutes or whatever.
Well, that's why that Riley playing right D for a bit at camp for basically like 2 days really kind of interested me, because it would allow them to play their four best defensemen together in their top four. And I kind of like that. I see the limitations with putting Riley on his offside, but like, to your point,
what would you do? Yeah. Muzzin, Riley, and
Giordano Brody. Yeah. And then your third pair would be Sandin Hall. And then when Liljegren comes back, it's Sandin Liljegren. Like, I kind of like that better for a playoff series, but like, we're a long way from the playoffs. I guess you can go to that if you want to at some point.
Well, I know you wrote about it. Do you think they were just looking at Riley on the right side, or do you think they're actually going to use that? Or like, do you think
let me ask you, James.
Is that there to be careful in case the injuries happen and they need to go to it at some point?
Well, put on your detective hat. Let me ask you, what do you think of this? So I asked Riley like about this, and he said he started doing it in the summer, like just during skates and stuff, just in case. So now I'm thinking, okay, is he thinking, man, like, I'm looking at a roster, like, if Sandin doesn't sign, or he gets traded, or he can't play the right, who's there? Like, I guess obviously they would have Liljegren, they'd have Brody, they'd have Hall. What if they traded Hall?
Yeah, I think they could. Hall has been on the, or at least he was last fall, was on the trade block. And when everyone's healthy, the Leafs are over the cap. Like, something's still got to give here. So they might be down to one right shot defenseman here, or maybe no right shot defenseman.
Maybe no right shot.
If Liljegren's still not out.
Yeah, it just raised a little bit of a red flag with me that Riley would start thinking, maybe I got to play over there. That's
I don't know. Don't you think that maybe the team said something to him about that might happen?
Based on what like you said, we don't know exactly what goes on, but based on what he said, he made it sound like it was like his idea. And then training camp started, and one day at camp, he was playing with Ben, who's another left shot. And Ben was on the right and he was on the left. And he said to the coach, you know what? Like, I can play the right. And then the next day they put him on the right.
And he's like, why don't you move me over there?
Maybe you should put me there. No, he said it was before practice. Anyway, like, I do think it's very interesting to me. I think they have a good crop of defensemen. Like, I think this is the best group of defensemen they've had, I don't know, since whoever long. But it's very much unsettled. Like, nothing feels locked in at all.
Do you know, Jonas, I looked this up before the show because I knew we would talk about this. Do you know the percentage of defensemen, regular defensemen in the NHL that are left shots?
It's some insane number, isn't it? Like 70% or something?
No, it's not that high. No.
60?
Yeah, it's about 58. It depends where you'd cut it. I cut it off at playing. Defensemen who played 30 games in the NHL last year, it was 58%, a little over 58%. So that means that there are, last year there were 38 more left shots than right shots among defensemen, which means that's, basically 58% is if you take seven defensemen per team, it means four are left shots and three are right shots. So the Leafs are more left heavy than the average NHL team, but most NHL teams are left shot heavy.
Well, I'd like them to be, I think I wrote this in the playoffs or sometime around, maybe in the summer. I think they need to be a little bit more malleable than they are. Like there's just a little bit too much of this guy only plays the left side. This guy only plays the right side. This, I mean, like even with the forwards, this guy only plays here. This guy only plays like,
well,
I,
you know, I think some of that's coming from the players though. Like, you know, there are just some players who say they can't do it.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, Muzzin basically has said that he can't do it.
Do you remember back the Leafs at one point early on when I was covering the team had too many right shots? Do you remember that? I don't remember that.
So who would the right shots have been? Like Shen, Finger? Yeah. Was Finger a right shot?
Yes.
No, Finger, was he a right shot?
No.
Because he played with Shen, so he probably wasn't a right shot.
Yeah, I think they played him on, I think they played him on his offside. I believe he was a right shot, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Part of, because remember I did that big story on Jeff Finger back in part of the his first season, he played with Shen, who I think was a rookie, and he was on the offside, and that's part of why he struggled. But I remember when they got Cody Franz in whatever year that was, and he's a right shot. Mm-hmm. And I remember one of the first things I asked him was, can you play on the left side? Because they got a whole bunch of right guys, right shot D. And, Cody Franz looked at me. He's like, I never have. And like, cause there's so few.
I never will.
No, he just said, I can't, I've never done it. I'm pretty sure I can't do it. You know, and he wasn't the most mobile guy, but he was just brutally honest. It was like, he didn't know who I was. It was like our first conversation. He's like, I can't do it. And I'm like, oh, that's interesting.
Well, remember Gardner was the same way. Like he was, I don't even think it was like a thing he would even contemplate. And I totally forgot that Riley played that 15-16 season on the right side. Totally forgot that. And then just looked at my Excel spreadsheet and I was like, oh my God. Yeah, he played that whole season. But that season was like a bottom out season.
So. That was part of the tank battle plan.
But he was pretty good. Like he was playing with like Matt Hunwick that whole year and like they were fine. We should take a break and then I want to talk about those contracts and then we should get to the pod back.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
We've talked a little bit about Matthews' extension. We talked about it with CJ when he was on. But you wrote about it, and you wrote about some of the reasons why it's not something people should be worried about. Can we start with the cap implications? Because I think
we can start really anywhere you want.
Tell me why.
This is how the sausage is made. I sent you a draft of my story yesterday, and I was like, what do you think of this? And you're like, it's good, but you got to move these things around and put them in a different order. And I was like, yeah, that makes sense. So the final version, I just moved around. There's like three things that I wrote about that are going to, I think, help the Leafs get Matthews signed. And the cap is one of them.
Well, so explain why the cap is going to matter when it comes to his extension next summer, if he signs an extension.
The way that the CBA has been structured, it's kind of like a pandemic CBA where the players had this big salary debt that they need to pay off. And because revenues have rebounded quickly last year and presumably this year as well, the players may pay that escrow debt off relatively quickly, which would mean then that the cap can go back to resume its normal growth. And normal growth in the past, a lot of the time was 3.5, 4, 4.5, 5 million a year is often how much the cap was going up. Now, the cap's been artificially stagnant because of the pandemic and because of what happened with revenues, because of how high escrow was. and it's been set so it can only rise 1 million a year. But we're going to move out of that environment. And, you know, Bill Daly's been talking about it a little bit. Elliot Friedman had a really good piece that kind of laid out where teams think the cap's going to go. Essentially, what the league thinks and what they're telling teams is that potentially where the cap could go is it's only going to go up by 1 million for next year. So this coming season is 82.5, next year 83.5. But then they believe the year after that, which would be the first year of a Matthews contract, they believe the cap could go up to as much as around 88 million and then up another 4 million into 92 in the year after that. So that's going to open up a whole bunch of extra cap space. Potentially, in other words, 2 or 3 years from now, the cap could be 10 million higher than what it is this season. And, you know, you look at Matthews right now, his cap hit is 11.64. He's already making close to 12 million. Whatever he gets on an extension, it's not going to eat up that whole 10 million. So the Leafs can earmark a chunk of that to him, and he can get a record-setting contract in terms of the cap hit and the percentage on cap and things like that. And I think the Leafs will still be in a relatively solid position.
Well, so if I'm looking at this right, James, like when he signs that contract in 2019, I'm looking at Cap Friendly, the cap hit percentage is 14.64%.
Yep.
Is it conceivable that when he signs his next extension, it might not be that much higher a percentage of the cap, depending on what it is, or like how much higher will it be? 16%? Like what will it be? 17%?
I think it's going to be higher. Nathan MacKinnon just signed the 8-year deal, and he got 15.3. Okay, so I would say that would be the absolute floor of what Matthews would get. So I can't do this math right off the top of my head, but 15.3 times 83.5 next year. So that would put the contract around 13 million. I think it's going to be higher than that, though, Jonas, especially when they can see that a year. The interesting thing is that, like, that cap hit percentage is tied to the year you sign the deal, not the year the deal starts, if that makes sense.
So would that 14.64, is that tied to the 19?
Yes.
20?
Yes. Okay. Exactly. So it's tied. So if you're Matthews, you're going to want your extension's not starting until the year when the cap potentially goes up a lot, right?
Yeah, right.
You got to make sure I'm not too far in the weeds on this. It's easier to do if people haven't seen my story, I included a list of the highest cap hit percentages of all time. And a lot of them were quite a long time ago, back when the cap was 40 million, 45, 44 million. You know, a lot of players had, you know, 17, 18% of the cap. The highest recent cap hit percentage was Connor McDavid on the contract he's on now. And when he signed his extension, it was 16.67%. And I think that's probably the number that you'll probably be looking at, the Matthews side looking at. If you do 16.67 times, let's say, you know, the 88 number, which is presumably how high the cap's going to be that first year of his deal, that works out to 14.7 million a year.
Yeah, that seems right. Well, 2 points on that, James. Am I wrong to think that MacKinnon, this sounds stupid because it makes that contract made him the highest paid player in the league, but that felt like a little bit low. Like that, yep. I don't know. Like that,
I agree.
I
agree. I mean, you're coming off winning the cap, winning the cup, winning the cap.
And winning the cap.
Yeah. He did win the cap as well. But you know, I think, you know what it comes down to, Jonas, is like the guaranteed money. Like if you get 12.6 times 8 years, it's $101 million. So
it's nice. You know,
it's okay. I mean, you're set up, right? So it's a physical sport. Nathan MacKinnon's a little bit older than Matthews is going to be when he signs his extension. MacKinnon's, I believe he's 27 now. Like his extension is going to kick in a little. So I think there's part of the calculation for Matthews is going to be, you know, does he sign shorter term than 8 years? Does he sign a 3, 4, or 5-year deal and set himself up for another contract after that? You know, this is going to be, he's in his second contract. This is going to be his third. Does he think about his fourth contract? Because if the cap keeps going up 4 million a year, let's say he signs a 4-year deal. I don't know how far you want to go down.
No, I love this. I'm enjoying this.
Okay. Hopefully you're not the only one.
Did you see the movie Margin Call?
No, it's on my list to watch that though.
Okay. Well, yeah. there's a scene where like the boss basically says to like this guy, he's like a rocket scientist who's doing the numbers for them. He's like, explain it to me like I'm a fifth grader or a fourth grader. And that's kind of how I feel. You're explaining it in a way that I can understand. So continue.
Oh, yeah. Well, I hope I'm succeeding. So the first year, Matthew's contract, 88 million, second year, 92 and a half, third year, 97, fourth year, 101.5. This is just assuming that there's continued revenue growth and, you know, maybe the jerseys will be completely covered with ads. So let's say he signs a four-year deal on his next contract. The cap could be at $102 million by that point. His next contract, when he could be UFA again, he's still not going to be that old. What's he going to be, 30, 31 years old? The cap could be $106 million. If we're still talking about like 16% of the cap, you know, all of a sudden, you know, it's a $17, $18 million a year potentially. And then you could sign 8 years, right? Maybe do 8 years by whatever that number is.
Yeah, but so like one of your other reasons in the story was just the flexibility or the creativity that they can take with the contract. If you remember at the time when he signed that 5 year deal, it was like, he's signing for 5 years? That seems weird. So like I do, and yet I actually think it's really smart. Like, I think it's
really
smart.
Like that contract for the Leafs at the time because of that, because it's like, boy, like this is going to be coming back around on them pretty quickly.
Well, and they didn't get like a haircut on the cap number either. So, but anyway, that contract's done. But like,
they did a little bit because he got less than McDavid, I guess.
But McDavid signed 8 years. I could see a world where, like, I actually think it's smart if you're Matthews, and we've talked about this idea before, but like, if he signs a 4 year contract and it takes him, like, I guess would he be 30? At that point, or 30, right around there?
I think he'd be 31. I mean, his birthday is like right at the start of the season, right? So it depends where you want to count from. He's 25 now. There's two years left on his deal. So he'll be 27 at the start of the next deal. So if he does 4 years, then it's 27, 28, 29. Yeah. Yeah.
So I guess the point is like his next contract would be at a point where the cap has gone up a bunch, presumably, and he's still 31. He's still presumably really good. He can get even more money. Like financially, it makes more sense for a guy like that to do shorter contracts.
Well, and when you're 30, 31, maybe that's when you want the 7-8 year deal, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And at that point, you know, you can still like pick your destination, you know, like maybe the Leafs, this version of the Leafs will have run its course in another 4 or 5 years and who knows, right? It just the one thing I didn't have a lot of room in the story to talk about this, and you know this better than I do, but in the NBA, I think what's interesting is so many of the stars started taking those shorter term deals, you know, the Miami Heat, LeBron James, et cetera, et cetera. And the one thing it allowed them to do was not only benefit from the cap going up rapidly in the NBA and continually, you know, one up each other and sign these bigger deals, but also the flexibility was there that if you change teams frequently, you're more likely going to be able to hit with a team that's got the cap space, right? Like it changes which teams have cap space every summer. So if you're coming up as UFA every 2 or 3 years, then you could continually every 2 or 3 years end up with the team that's got a big number to spend.
And you're completely in control of your destiny, kind of, because your contract is so short. You know what I mean?
But you are gambling a bit though, because you know, if Matthew signs a 4 year deal instead of an 8 year deal, you're leaving, you know, whatever the cap hit you want to use, you know, you're leaving 50 odd million, 60 million on the table.
Yeah. But eventually you're figuring, I'm going to get this back and more.
Unless you get hurt, right? Like your career ends, or, you know, we've seen players who are greatly diminished by the time they're 30 years old.
Apparently, like in the NBA, because of the TV money, the contracts are just going to be insane soon. Like you're going to have players making like $70 million a season.
They already are insane, though, like compared to the NHL. I mean, if you look at the cap growth of the NBA, like we're talking about all the NHL caps going to start going up fast again, and it's like 4 million. Like, yeah, do you remember when those TV deals got done in the NBA? I remember looking at, because I'm interested in the CBA and the cap stuff. And I remember talking to Blake Murphy, who used to cover the Raptors for us, and he's a big cap nut on the NBA side. And it's like, this is a whole different planet. Because their cap was going up, wasn't it going up like $15 million a year or whatever? I remember looking at it, I was like, holy. And they have a smaller roster too, so.
Yes. I could go down to the weeds with you if you want, but I think we should. That's probably far enough into the weeds. But before we get to the pod bag, the other guy who they can sign an extension to next summer as well is Nylander. He's not like Matthews automatic. The day you can do it, the second you can do it, you do it. He's a little less that, obviously. And yeah, like I started looking, I was looking kind of like into the future, and it's like they kind of need to have him around. Like you start to look at like who are their long-term like cornerstone pieces, especially at forward. It's like it's Matthews, it's Marner, it's Nylander. Like,
I mean, Riley is signed,
but he's on defense. But yeah, like,
well, the thing is that Tavares is getting old, and Tavares, they're coming closer to the end of that contract,
right? That's the thing. So I asked you, and I will ask you on here, like, if you could sign Nylander to that extension today, what would it be?
Well, I think probably what he's looking at, I honestly, Jonas, I like to do like look at the comparables and all that kind of thing, but
we haven't done any of that.
No, I haven't looked at any of it. So I'd just be guessing. But I would guess that if he's going long term, I would guess that his contract would probably start with a 9, would be my guess. That's, I mean, you look at the contract of Barzal just signed for, it's different because he's younger, but I think that with what you look at Nylander, his production the last 3 years.
Yeah,
he's top 30, top 35 in the NHL. And that's what those players are gonna get.
Well, and Barzal's not really that much younger. He's like a year younger. He's 25 and Willie is 26. He's a little bit, like, he's just over a year. Mm. But yeah, I think it's going to be something like that. And I think it's like an interesting question of like, do you want to commit that long? How good do you think he can be? But like, I kind of think, like I mentioned, that they're going to need him around. Anyway, that's
I think part of the question, Jonas, is does Nylander want to stay? Like,
that's a good question too.
Like, yeah. I think a big factor in the Matthews thing that some people overlook, that maybe people that aren't in, Matthews loves Toronto and he likes being here. He and Marner and some of the other Leafs have become really good friends. And like, I think he wants to stay. And I think that's going to be a huge factor here. He's not looking to leave. So yeah. I don't know with Nylander where his head's. I know he likes being in Toronto. I just don't know. Like, is he going to want to sign a year early, or is he going to want to explore his options and go for the most money?
It's a good question. And I think what's interesting and kind of odd is, like, in the beginning, people like thought that contract was going to be like he was stealing from the Leafs. And it's like, now you look back and it's like, well, they actually kind of got the better end of it. And so if you're him and you're his camp, you're thinking, well, we got kind of shortchanged a little bit on that one. We're going to want more on the next one.
I think that contract was fine. I think
it's fair.
Yeah.
I think he's maybe $7 million a smidge year. Underpaid. But yeah.
And his first year was not good.
Not good.
So part of the equation too, Jonas, that we haven't talked about. I mean, are you going to want to bring the whole band back together if they haven't had any playoff success, right? I mean, that's going to be a factor with...
That's more a factor with Nylander, right? Like, there's no matter what happens next season, whoever's in charge, they're going to try to sign Matthews. If they have a similar situation go down in the playoffs next year, all bets are off as to everything else, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All right. That was fun. Let's take a break and let's get to the pod bag. Okay, James, it's pod bag time. Reminder to eat at your local restaurants. I tried a place called Soul Shakers. Pretty recently, some amazing food. So I highly recommend that place. It's like, it's far from you though. So you might have to like take the subway.
Was your soul shaken?
Yes. They had these like, what are they called? These like sliders. They were almost like burgers that were just ridiculous. And they had these like kimchi kind of fries, which were just insane. So highly recommend.
All right. I don't know if you can answer this or not, but Patrick wants to know about Curtis Sanford coming in as the new goalie coach and the talk of the Leafs putting more resources into goaltending. Patrick's question is, Jonas, have you seen any differences with how the goalies are being treated in practice and in training camp? And do you have any insight into the adjustments that are occurring to increase the focus on goaltending in the organization?
Well, I think you go back to the summer, obviously, they make the change with Steve Briere. And it felt like they were going to make that more of like a priority. So John Elkin has been around, but now it kind of feels like he's more at the center of things. And that's just my perception of it. Obviously,
Elkin is in the center.
Elkin. Yeah.
And he's been in the organization for...
Yeah, and he goes back to Kyle Dubas in the Sioux. Like, he was the goalie coach, literally, that Kyle Dubas hired to coach Matt Murray because John Elkin worked with Matt Murray when he was a kid.
I like John. I worked with him on when I did that big story on goaltending in Sweden and other countries. I remember talking to him quite a bit, and he's a smart guy. So it's interesting. So it's basically like they got two goalie coaches now, then, is what you're saying.
Yeah, but like he was like, he would be directly involved, for example, in like what they were going to do in goal in the summer, like what options were out there, like what do we have? Like, so,
well,
like,
what's his title? Do you know it off the top of your head? It's like,
I'm looking at their
goalie page. Development or something like that.
Goaltender evaluation and development.
Right.
So he's under the player development bracket of the organization.
I would see him with the Marlies previously, right? Like, he would be on that rank, wouldn't he?
Yeah. Yeah. So if it feels like he's more central, maybe I'm not reading that right, but it is different now that Briere is gone. Like, Briere had been there a long time. I think he'd been there, I'm pretty sure.
Well, Babcock hired Briere.
Right. So that's
his first year. I think his first year, because he interviewed a whole bunch of goalie coaches, and that's how they found Steve Briere. So it goes back to 2015.
Right. And so their work before practice, like, I'd be reluctant to try to explain it, but you can see the work that they do before practice is different now with Curtis Sanford. And obviously Sanford comes
different
from...
Now. Do you have like...
No, I haven't dug in on that just yet.
Okay.
But I'm...
Well, that's a good story though. I want to...
Things in the works.
You know, the thing that's frustrating is that we're not allowed to talk to the goalie coaches, which like the thing, like the goalies are basically playing a different sport from everybody else. They're doing something completely different. So, like, you can ask the head coach or you can ask the other players about the goalies, but they don't know.
They don't know.
They don't know. Goaltending is... So, you really need to talk to someone in the organization who really knows goaltending, and there's only typically one or two people, and you're not allowed to talk to them. So, I find writing about the goalies can be really difficult in that environment.
But I do think, James, like, the Elkin factor is important just because, like, he knows Matt Murray better than anyone knows Matt Murray in hockey, I would think, just because their relationship extends so far back. And like Elkin's basically worked with him his whole life. So we'll see how that plays out. Like they're betting obviously a lot. Like we haven't talked a lot about the goalies at camp, which is a good thing for the Leafs. Matt Murray has played well when he's played. Yeah. Like, yeah. I mean, like you said, it's preseason hockey, but like they've not been a story, which is good, and they've not been hurt, which is a story. So, like, those are positive things.
Okay, Connor is going to throw this one at you. According to Dom's season preview model, the Leafs are a top two team in the league. How much do you trust the model?
You know, it's funny. I saw Dom lives pretty close to me, so I see him quite a bit in my neighborhood. And we went for a beer, and he told me that that's what the model was saying. And I was like, yeah, I mean, I kind of see it, like.
Guess what, Jonas? It doesn't just say they're a top two team.
It says they're the best team. Right?
That hasn't come out yet on the site, but I believe is the second one's coming out real. Everyone's going to know soon anyway. So,
but like, I mean, you look at, they finished fourth last year with 115 points. Florida obviously won the President's Trophy. I think they're going to be worse. Colorado will still be really good, so they're right there. Carolina had 116 points. I guess like they'll be really good, obviously, again. But like there's no reason to think the Leafs won't be in that conversation again, right? Like,
well,
in the regular season, like we're just talking regular season. I don't see why they wouldn't.
It comes down to the goaltending, really, for me. I mean, I think the skaters, I don't see any reason why the Leafs are going to take a big step back from last year.
Yeah, I guess where it could become a problem is if not just the goaltenders, but the goaltenders' health. Like if they're getting into a situation where Eric Schallgren is having to start for a month, that's a little more problematic, I think, for this.
You even look at like Colorado's goaltending situation. I mean, Florida, yeah. I don't love what Florida's got in. I don't know how you're supposed to project. So I don't envy Dom trying to come up with a statistical model that predicts what the goalies are going to give you, because there aren't very many sure things left around the league. I had my fantasy pool, not last week, but about 10 days ago. And You know, I think goalies are undervalued in fantasy pools a lot, and I tend to really...
I always drop them.
You do? I always draft them really high. I always...
Oh, like, yeah. You draft them high, but like in keeper league, you just drop them.
I want studs, and like it felt like... So I got Vasilevsky and Shesterkin. I used my two first picks on goalies. I'm loaded there. And then the goalies still weren't going. I was like, oh, I'm going to take another one. And I got Tristan Jarry as my third goalie. So
how many can you play at once?
Well, you can only play two at once. But the thing is, there's so many tandem goalies around the league, and the backups play so much, and there's so many injuries. And I actually have four goalies on my team. I also have Samsonov, who we'll see. Like, if he ends up being the starter, I'll keep him and trade him or something. But I would much rather have a whole bunch of good goalies, because you're not going to be able to pick them up on the waiver wire.
No, that's true. Unless it's like Pavel. Well, I guess he's not anymore, but I was thinking, or like one of those guys who's like a backup. But let me ask you this, getting back to that question. Is there any team in the East that you would say they are definitively better than the Leafs? And if so, who is that team?
I mean, maybe Tampa.
Yeah, but
they lost Palat and they lost McDonough.
Those are really big pieces. Now, Sergachev is just going to play more, and they've got young guys who can play more. But
when they're getting older too, right? Like, age is going to be a factor for some of their best players.
Yeah. Do you think Carolina is definitively better than the Leafs? Probably not.
No, I think they're right there. I think there's a group of whatever, five teams in the East that are in that ballpark. It's interesting because some of the other models that have come out, like I saw that Jay Fresh had one, and the Leafs were, I think he had them eighth in the East, like just narrowly making the playoffs.
That's absurd. That's crazy.
He had them with 98 points.
They had 115 points with like so-so goaltending.
Yeah, I don't see it either, but I look at Florida and I look at their blue line as that. I'm not seeing how they're going to be able to repeat what they did last year.
I was dubious about their blue line last year. And then,
I like Boston's team, but they got all those injuries and they're getting older. And I don't know what Boston's goalies are going to give them.
I don't know. I'm not really convinced that the division is so much better. Those bottom teams are just, they're not going to be as terrible, but they're still not going to be good, right?
I still think it's a tough division. It's probably still the best division. Well, the funny thing, Jonas, is that what happened with the cap being flat again, all of the teams that were the best teams last year lost something, right? Basically.
Yeah. Yep.
Colorado loses their goalie and they lose Kadri. All the top teams basically lost something. Well, I guess Carolina with Burns and Pacioretty coming in, they're going to be interesting to watch this year.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm just looking at all the divisions. All the divisions are kind of like four good teams and then a bunch of crappy teams. Well, all right, next question,
James. For whatever reason, the West is not as strong as it used to be. I mean, remember, it used to be the West was the top division or the top conference for a long time, and it's not that way anymore. Nick says, special guest Cam Charron, ? So Cam worked for 8 years in the analytics department with the Maple Leafs, and he has started writing for us at The Athletic. If you didn't see his first piece, it came out on Monday, and really good reception. What did you think of what he had to say, Jonas?
I haven't read that, actually. I have it on that. You know, when you can save your stories, it's saved.
Yeah. Well, basically, you know, he talked about kind of what he learned, basically what he learned working in the Leafs analytics department and what he's going to try and bring. Back when Cam, I get to toot his horn a little bit, but back when Cam was writing about the Leafs, he was writing for various websites before Kyle Dubas hired him to the team. He was one of my favorite writers to read, and I liked his perspective. And he used to write a game story after every Leafs game that I would always read. And, you know, when he announced he was leaving the Leafs, it didn't take me very long to send him a message and say, are you coming back to writing? So, and the answer is yes, he's back. So it's going to be, you know, and I know one of his first pieces that he has coming is going to be about Carolina, and it's going to be really interesting.
Look forward to it, man. Look forward to it.
Curtis says, thoughts on the Jacob Chychrun rumors. You got anything on that?
Not really. It doesn't really work for them, like, unless it's like some big deal.
I know that they're being thrown in the rumor mill, but I would be shocked if they were one of the top suitors for him.
Well, it would take them kind of gutting their roster a bit, right?
I don't know. He didn't have a great year last year. I would be hesitant to give up as much as they're going to want for him. Like part of the reason he hasn't been dealt so far is that Arizona is playing a hard bargain and they're asking for a lot. They're asking for more than I would want to give up.
But James, like just to make him fit, you'd have to give up roster pieces plus all that other stuff.
Well, I mean, I guess theoretically you could trade Muzzin or something and create the cap space that way. In theory. Muzzin has a no movement clause, so I don't think he's going to waive it for Arizona.
Yeah.
Here's another question from either another Curtis or the same Curtis again. He says, Murray, Samsonov have looked really good so far. How much of that do you think is real, and how much do you chalk it up to the level of competition they faced? Preseason's really hard to know with the goalies.
Yeah, I don't put much stock in that.
The thing, though, if they look really bad, that can mean something I've seen in the past. Like, if a goalie really struggles in preseason, sometimes that's real.
Yeah, I remember Brian Burke. Remember that when he said, like, he watched, like, I think it was Toskala get lit up in the preseason. He was basically like, uh-oh.
We're
in trouble. So, yeah, it's funny how, like, if they're bad, that's kind of alarming. But if they're good, it's like, oh, well, we'll see.
Yeah, that's my rule of thumb with it. So, I think that, you know, like you said, they've generally looked positive. My theory going in is that the goalies, everyone's going to think they're going to be the problem, and they're going to be okay. I think they're going to be just okay, barring injuries.
Well, and we'll see with the playoffs, James. Like, the goal is not to have good goaltending in the regular season, right? That's going to be the thing. Like, will they have the goaltending that can beat Vasilevsky eventually?
Tyler has a question that is going to be difficult to answer, but he says, how do the Leafs get cap compliant? Currently, they are going to be over, right? How do the cap concerns influence Nick Robertson or Malgin's chances of making the team? Malgin's at a league minimum deal, so you can't pay him any less. Robertson's at $7.96, so it's like an extra $46K over a league minimum, so there's a little bit more money there. I think
Keep going. No, go ahead.
I think what's going to happen with the cap situation is they're going to have to, so they have to cut down to be cap compliant on the day before, at like 5 p.m. the day before the season starts. So 5 p.m. on the Monday, mm-hmm. right? And what they're going to do, what you can do is you can put injured players on that compliant roster, if that makes sense. You'll have to waive some extra guys, but they can just leave, let's say Tavares and Engvall aren't ready. They can just leave them on the roster, cut down to a 20-player roster, and they can get compliant with that. Now, they're compliant with some guys who might not be able to play the game one. So then what you need to do is you put them not on LTIR, you put them on regular IR, you do potentially an emergency recall, and that's probably what they're going to need to do. But, you know, and there's also the Jordy Ben on LTIR and Dahlstrom, and there's a couple little things that Pridham can play with there.
I don't think Ben is going to be out that long.
You don't think he'll miss enough time to be on LTIR?
They said 3 weeks, minimum of 3 weeks. So we'll see. Oh,
okay. So that's my impression. I think worst case scenario, at some point the Leafs will have to play a game down a player.
The NHL.
Well, I mean, you can decide to not go into the season this tidy. And then to answer Tyler's question, how do the Leafs get cap compliant? The real tricky part is when Liljegren is healthy and assuming the rest of the roster is healthy, then something's got to give. Then they got to trade. They got to trade somebody.
But you're like, that's why you wait, right? Because like the chances everything is healthy.
But probably not if that they high. Can't make a trade, they might have to just put like a Hall on waivers or something. Like,
yeah,
I would think you'd be able to get something for him. I think we're at time here, right? We got time for one more?
Let's do one more.
Boy, Curtis, you asked a lot of questions. Curtis says, in retrospect, do you think the Leafs could have done better on the Andreas Johnsson trade? Joey Anderson has turned into a fine player. Johnsson isn't great. You know, at that point, with the what was happening with the pandemic and the cap being flat and the Leafs needing to shed salary, I think they were not in a position where they were going to get a big return on that trade.
No, and that always just felt like, I know they tried to, they spoke highly of Joey Anderson at that point, but like he was always just kind of going to be this. And it's like, you look now and like Andreas Janssen is like he's making 3-4 and he had 35 points last year playing 14 minutes a game, I'm seeing. Like he's, you know what I mean? Like he's still kind of like...
That contract and the Kapanen contract were both predicated on the cap going up and those guys improving. And I'm not sure that either of those things really happened. So those contracts didn't end up working out. I was surprised that they gave those guys those contracts when they did. Because remember how tight they were? That was the year they gave up the first round pick to trade Marlowe. And I remember going into that draft, like, how are they going to get cap compliant? And I thought they would squeeze Janssen and Kapanen, and they didn't. And in hindsight, I think they probably should have.
Well, they were bets, right? Like, they were basically just betting that those guys would eventually outplay those contracts, and that just never happened or has not happened.
Yeah.
So, anyway. All right.
Anywho?
Well, this has been fun, James. I should remind you to subscribe to the Athletic Hockey Show on YouTube. And we will chat, I believe, next week, right before the start of the season, or
yeah,
are I we gonna so. Do yeah?
And well, I don't know. And maybe then the games two. Will start. Maybe we got to do two next week. I don't know.
A double edition,
double trouble. Right.
Yeah, we'll see. But yeah, the games start for real. The Leafs will play twice more in the preseason, back to back with Detroit, and then there'll be cuts. And then the season will start. And then the next thing you know, James, it'll be December and we'll be knee deep in snow.
Hey.
Nothing?
Woo.
All right, James. Thank you. We'll talk next week.